I'm Shannon.
And I'm Rami. And this is Workplace Hugs, where we talk about interesting things we've read, heard, or experienced to help us all expand our life toolkit with a whole bunch of empathy without a whole new degree. Shannon, today we're talking about gardening, cultivation.
I was thinking, how is he going to make this one funny? How is he going to make this one funny?
This is how we're talking about kombucha, right?
We are totally talking about kombucha today. If you work at a company with kombucha being one of your products.
Isn't that what they call the thing in the kombucha?
Yeah, it's a culture. Yeah, or yogurt. Doesn't yogurt have cultures?
Yeah, I think it has a culture too. Okay. I think anything that is a, fermented foods. Mm.
So we're not talking about fermented foods today, guys. We're talking about how to cultivate a healthy culture. And some background on this. So this episode isn't coming out of just like one specific book I read or one article, but it's more of just my own personal curiosity and fascination with workplace cultures. I'm primarily going to be leaning on research coming out of Spencer Stewart. They're a global HR consulting firm. But honestly, the more research I did, the more I also just get curious about how are we cultivating conscious cultures within our family units? I feel like Rami and I are starting to talk about our kids more and more on these podcast episodes. And sometimes I'm just thinking a lot about like, how do the concepts that we're talking about at Workplace Hugs also relate to our familial life a little bit? So we'll see where the conversation takes us.
Can I ask a question before we get into this?
Of course.
I'm very excited for this, but what made you want to research this?
I think it's coaching so many different clients who are working in different environments and getting curious about how different organizations choose to consciously create cultures. Do you know that there are like literal jobs in HR are like culture curators a little bit? And the more research I did, the more I was just getting more and more fascinated at how potentially, not in every organization, but in some of like the behemoth organizations, like they're very intentional. They're very like calculated and strategic about crafting culture in a certain way. And honestly, it makes me look back at our Target days and I get curious, like how much were we just like, you know, crafted into a certain culture a little bit?
100%. 100%.
It's fascinating. Fast, fun, friendly, right?
Yes.
Be bold. Anyways, okay. So we're going to talk about a couple different themes. First, I just want to anchor us all into like, what are the different kinds of workplace cultures anyway? Because that was kind of fascinating to learn about. Then we're going to dive into one specific type of culture, which is the learning culture. What is a learning culture? What are the benefits of it? And then the next theme we're going to talk about is how do you cultivate a learning culture? And then, Rami, I want to talk about how we're cultivating learning cultures at home, or just, you know, applying this to our family lives a little bit too. Okay, so let's dive in. What the heck are the different kinds of workplace cultures that you can have? Rami, did you know that according to this research, there are 8 distinct different kinds of cultures that can exist?
I thought there were 2, good and bad.
I mean, I think we all agree that there's that specific too. But there's 8 types. Yeah, and they put them in this matrix. I'll try to throw this visual up whenever we post about this episode on LinkedIn. But you could probably Google it too. There's 8 distinct things that they map on a matrix, and the axes of the matrix are dealing with these factors. One axis is stability versus flexibility. Mm-hmm. So how much stability do you value in your organization versus how much are you wanting to promote a culture of like, we're flexible, we're nimble. And then the other axis is how much independence versus interdependence you want to promote. So for example, we're going to be doubling down on the learning culture today. Learning culture is highly flexible with a mild lean towards independence, to just anchor you in. So I know when I was looking at this, I was like, this is kind of bullshit. Like, shouldn't every culture be a learning culture? Like, doesn't every culture need to be flexible and independent?
Not at all.
This is like what my naive mind was thinking.
Look at the inverse of learning, which is authority, right? Is like on the stability side.
Yeah. Yep.
like that would be, I don't know. I'm sure there are government positions where it's much more like black and white. We do X. That's it. There's no flexibility here. There's no, like, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's, and we don't accept anything else. And we don't care if you learn, because you don't need to learn as long as you understand what it is that you do and you do that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that example. So I was going to talk through a couple different examples. So Rami was just speaking to that one of the eight culture types can be authoritarian, which is highly stable, leans a little bit to independence. And I thought of prisons. You know, if we even think about like prisons as an example, I've been watching a lot of Suits lately. So if anybody else is, you know, binge watching that show on Netflix, maybe you know about the prison episodes now, but they need a highly authoritarian culture to be successful in the sense of what they're trying to do every day.
Which is under stability, which makes sense. Like, you wouldn't want a prison to have a lot of flexibility. No. That seems counterintuitive.
Like an invitation for chaos. Yep. So then another culture I was thinking about, keeping the show Suits in mind, I was thinking about lawyers. I'm learning a ton about law firms and how those organizations work, both in the clients that I work with and from the show Suits. And I was thinking, where do law firms sit on this matrix? And I would say that lawyers lean a little bit more towards interdependence, but high stability still. So they're more in a safety culture or an order culture. Like, they're literally law and order, right, people? So that's another example. Then I was thinking about people who are in sales organizations. I used to exist in a lot of sales organizations. They are going to be more of a results culture type. So where results is on this matrix is highly independent, right? We need those salespeople to feel motivated, to feel like they are in charge of their own destiny, and leans a little bit to stability because we want them to be stable in the sense that they're selling a bunch of shit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Shannon, have you gotten to Dulé Hill yet on Suits?
The what?
The person, Dulé Hill.
I don't remember that. I just finished season 9.
No, like Dulé Hill is an actor who is on the show.
I don't know the names of actors, Rami. You should know this by now. Who is that? Okay. Who, like, what character
is he? Bald. I don't know. My wife was watching it, but I think he's on it. He's like bald. Let me confirm. Hell, Suits. Yes, he was on Suits. His character's name was
Louis Litt?
Alex Williams. Have you gotten to Alex Williams?
Yeah. Oh yeah, Alex. Yeah, Alex is great.
That's cool. He's in 7, 8, and 9. Oh yeah, you just got through it all.
Yeah, I've seen it all.
My wife is like obsessed with him because he was also on The West Wing.
Oh.
And he's on Psych. And he always finds a way to tap dance, regardless of role that he is in, because he's a very talented tap dancer. But I am nervous to ever run into him because my wife will leave me for him.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to leave that out there. I don't think she would ever actually leave you, but okay. Okay, let's get back on track here. So these are just a couple of examples of the eight different culture types. Rami, I want us to take a pause here. Rami can see the little grid of the matrix in front of him, so I'm not just like making him do this from memory. Based on your own company's like key goals right now, what do you think is the culture type that your company most needs to achieve their goals?
Purpose or results, and they're very far away from each other.
So the difference between purpose and results, people, there is they are super different. They're literally on opposite ends. Do you think you need more flexibility or more stability right now?
I think so. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think results is probably the right one, because I think there's more stability with independence rather than interdependence.
Okay.
So maybe it's results.
So results it is. What made you come to that conclusion?
I think it's an interesting time for us. We're trying to like kind of pivot the org around like a new sales function.
Uh-huh.
And so delivering on those results, I think, is really important. While also giving everybody like a little bit of stability in that, like, we're shifting kind of our focus as an organization.
Yeah. So, and even just in what you were describing, I was thinking, oh, flexibility must not be, it makes sense why flexibility isn't as important right now, because it sounds like the plan has been determined. Mm-hmm. We just need to execute upon it a little bit.
Independently, not interdependently.
Well, or I'm thinking about, I'm a little bit trying to shift us into our next topic, which is learning culture. So learning culture would value flexibility a little bit more. Yep. And it sounds like, no, we're not really wanting to be flexible. Like, we know what the goal is. We know what the strategy is. Now we need to shift more into stability, in the sense of demonstrating stability in our ability to, like, get it across the line.
Exactly.
Okay. So I'm going to shift. That's fascinating, by the way. And I would guess that, well, the more that I've researched cultures, the more that I'm like, no, I'm not going to make any assumptions of what any organization needs right now in terms of the culture type that they should be in. But for the sake of our conversation, I am going to be doubling down a little bit on the learning culture next, because I think most of our listeners could probably benefit from growing their cultures to be more flexible, especially in navigating today's, like, exceedingly uncertain environment. I think a lot of us are experiencing that, like, VUCA energy that people talk about. Volatile, uncertain. Now I'm going to forget what the C and the A are, but you can look it up. Okay, so let's talk about the learning culture type next. So what is a learning culture and what are the benefits of it? A learning culture sits in that highly flexible quadrant or half and leans a bit towards independence. So when you think about learning culture, I want you to think about words like promoting open-mindedness, promoting exploration, promoting creativity, promoting innovation, adaptability, risk-taking, things like that. Those are the words that I think of when I think about a learning culture. What are the benefits of a learning culture? The research tells us we enhance employees' skills and performance when we value learning, right? Because a learning culture encourages employees to continuously acquire new knowledge and skills. Usually in learning cultures, you increase employee engagement and satisfaction with their jobs, because when they feel like they're having opportunities for growth and development, they tend to be more engaged. It promotes greater adaptability and innovation. Employees are more likely to be generating creative ideas and contribute to the organization's growth. And the one that I found really freaking fascinating was better DEI outcomes, diversity, equity, and inclusion outcomes. Studies have shown that there's a direct correlation between learning culture factors and better DEI outcomes, because when you're promoting a culture that values things like open-mindedness and curiosity, turns out we deliver better DEI outcomes at the same time. Okay, Rami, let's do a pause here. What was the best workplace culture you think you were ever a part of?
So
you cannot say your current employer. I'm just going to put that out there just in case his current employer is listening. Rami is prohibited from saying current employer. So don't take offense if that's not the one that gets listed.
I worked at the Honest Company at a really interesting time.
Uh-huh.
It was like rapid growth.
Uh-huh.
And it really felt like a super strong learning culture, in that, like, there wasn't enough time in the day to do any of the things we wanted to do. But it was very much a, like, let's try something. Like, we have no playbook. Let's try something. If it works, great. Someone please write it down and let's keep doing that. So we can remember that, like, it worked and it was great.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, also great. Please write that down and let's try and remember to never do that again, but let's take some learnings from it and, like, let's just keep going.
Yeah.
Because it was almost like that analogy of, like, building a plane while you're flying it. In that, like, we were trying to just make forward progress. And I think it allowed for all of these. And I would say, whether or not that had an influence on it, but, like, our DEI was, like, off the charts. It was, like, the most diverse team I've ever been a part of.
Oh, that's cool. I love that you have a lived experience of a potential correlation between a learning culture and DEI outcomes.
Oh, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it comes from the thing that makes a learning culture really easy to support is a business that's succeeding.
Yeah.
So like we were just selling more than we could make. And so it was really easy to say like, okay, let's figure out how to do better, because if we do better, we're going to sell more. But it was never like, oh, everybody, we need to sit down and talk about all of our misses. It was like, no, we don't really care about the misses so much as here's the opportunity of what we can get to more, right? It was never like, oh, we didn't sell X. It was, we sold everything we had and we would love to sell more. Let's figure out how to do that, as opposed to, hey, we could have sold more. Like, that's what we need to focus on, is that we didn't sell enough. Like, we could have sold more. No, it was like, we sold everything. Awesome. Now, how can we do better than that? And I think that is super easy to have a culture like that when you are being successful. I think it would be very intriguing to hear about a strong learning culture in a company where they are not succeeding.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. I'm thinking of some clients that I'm working with right now. I don't know if I've ever talked about the four phases that businesses can be in. We should probably do a side hug on this if I haven't already. But one of the phases that an organization can be in is a turnaround. And I like what you're saying about, gosh, like, can we, how do you promote learning culture when we're in the business phase of really needing to turn the ship? Like, I'm thinking of, these are not my client situations, to just be explicit, but I'm thinking of like when we both worked at Target, you know, and there was a lot of retailers going out of business. There's still a lot of retailers going out of business, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, can they have a learning culture when they're in a turnaround moment or season? I don't know. I'm curious about that. Is that the culture, what the culture needs at that time?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, remember, learning is under the flexibility side of things.
Yeah.
I think in those situations, you need to be under the stability side, right? Results,
you're trying to create
authority,
it.
Safety, or order. And so I think it would be very difficult to be in a downturning business or organization and say, yep, we should still focus on flexibility here. I think 90% of the time, you're going to be like, no, we have to focus on stability here to allow us the space to get to flexibility.
Okay, I want to stay on this tangent. But how do you encourage, like, let's think of our days at Target, you know, when there was there's still a lot of volatility in the retail environment. How do you ever encourage innovation? Because, like, they also need to be innovating if these dinosaurs are going to stay alive. How the heck do you encourage that at the same time as cultivating stability?
I wonder if it doesn't come from pockets, in that, like, I think it's like the main part of the business needs stability. Like, it needs to function.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, I think about my time doing design thinking at Target, and it was like, those were the ones taking those stable teams and trying to make them flexible.
Yes.
Once they got their stability under control. And I think that's the big thing. I think if you have gotten stable, then I think you have the ability to shift into flexibility. I don't think you can live in stability forever and find a way to be innovative in all those things. I think once you've built your bedrock, I think then you're good to figure out how to build a little flexibility on top of it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so let's go with the assumption that listeners are wanting to cultivate a learning culture. How the hell do you do that, like, in tangible ways? I'm thinking back to, oh, maybe I should tell this story. One of the best pieces of advice I got as a first-time manager was my leader telling me, focus on cultivating a learning culture on your team. So that's a little bit why I have a bias to learning culture. I should preface that because it was the first culture that I was consciously focusing on creating within my own team. And I don't think, clearly, I did not know enough about the strategy behind culture development to also identify that that's what my culture needed at that time. You know, like, we didn't need the other things. We already had the other things. We needed more of a learning culture mindset on our team. Okay, so how the hell do you do it? The first tip is to connect it back to your organization's current strategy or goals. So why is a learning culture imperative to delivering on the challenges and outcomes you're trying to deliver on right now?
So I think about my time at Target. That team, I was integrating two different teams. I was the first manager who would be making these two teams like be one cohesive team together. We had to learn how to be a little bit more flexible, open-minded in our thinking as we were determining what the future was going to look like together, as an example.
That's what I mean. Like, the big thing for you, though, was flexibility, not stability in that time, because you wanted the teams to be very nimble and willing to pivot
as
the needs of the business changed.
Yes.
And as you guys figured out
how to come together as a team,
function together. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, the second tip for how to cultivate a learning culture is to first, frankly, practice role modeling. So where are your peers, your employees, your bosses seeing you prioritize your own learning? Like, how are you demonstrating that you're open to new ideas, to failure, to feedback? Are you taking time to share when your own perspective has changed over time? Are you taking time out yourself to think outside the box and take risks a little bit?
Yeah, I think this one is really important. It's almost like what did I see a billboard? It said the other day, it said, your actions are speaking so loud I can't hear your words.
Oh, can you say that one more time? I want to sit with that.
Your actions are so loud I can't hear your words.
Whoa.
It was something like that.
I love that.
But that's it was like, good. Oh, yeah, no, that's exactly it. So it's like, how do you walk the walk? And then whether or not it's being backed up with you saying it is like important, but it's going to go a lot further if you're saying and doing and mostly doing. So yeah, I think practicing that role model.
Yeah.
Modeling.
And I'm just going to embarrass Rami for a minute. I think you model learning so hard in how you approach life and how you approach parenting and how you've approached different roles in your career. And for me, like, you're really a role model for me in that sense, because you're freaking doing it all the time. You're like, oh, I'm into 3D printing now. I'm going to learn about this, you know, like, or I go back. What episode was it where we talked about making a curiosity to-do list? It's like one of the very first ones.
That was Da Vinci, right?
Yes.
That was Da Vinci.
Yes. One of the very first ones. And that has stuck with me. So kudos to Rami for role modeling how to be a constant learner.
Well, and I think, too, the thing that I would just say around this one is, like, if you are modeling it, be explicit about talking about it. And I think then people will start to understand, right? Because I can think of leaders who are really good at modeling it, but may not have been explicit enough that, like, we were all understanding it in the moment.
Oh,
we look back on
so
it and go,
good.
Oh, they were super good at it. But, like, I think a key here is being explicit when you're doing that, because you may be doing it implicitly, but you want your team to know that even if it's part of who you are, it's an explicit thing that you are doing and trying to model for the team.
Yeah. Can we talk about, I'll go first so you have time to think of your example, because this is like on the fly, guys. I'm really into this topic, though. Can we talk about, like, who your best role models were for learning and like how they explicitly demonstrated a learning culture? I'm curious. There's one leader in particular that's standing out for me in this moment. I remember her telling me, Shannon, I think I was promoted to SVP before I should have been. And at first I was like, fudge, you too? You guys, I just saved myself so Rami wouldn't have to mark this episode explicit. Fudge, you too? You have imposter syndrome too? But then when she walked me through, like, how she was thinking about that, she's like, so I'm just owning it. I've been promoted to SVP too soon, and I have a lot to learn, and here's how I'm thinking strategically about the things that I need to learn more about, and here are the intentional partners that I'm cultivating to help me make sure that I can close those gaps and also, like, have their wisdom while I'm working to close those gaps. And it was just such a profound moment for me of, like, oh, one, this is how we don't step into imposter syndrome. We just, like, own it and then move through it. And two, this is how we tangibly demonstrate to our teams, like, vulnerability and being honest and real of, like, I don't freaking have all the answers, but here's what I'm doing to help myself learn. That's the person that comes to mind for me. What about you?
Well, no, I think of my leader that I had at that company, and it was like we had such a diversity of background in terms of experience that it was like, oh, Rami, you worked at Target. So we're just going to have you walk us through a specific thing about like how Target would walk us through like this problem. And then, hey, Kathleen, like you worked at this other company, like how would they have done it? Or Emily, like you worked at this other company, like how would they have done it? Or how, like one of you guys worked at a consulting firm, like how would they do it there? And it was just like, I think one, it's vulnerability from the leader to say like, I don't know, I'm not the expert. You have some expertise. So can you share that with the team? And then for the team to see someone sharing and know that they have the ability to do the same thing, I think opens a lot of those doors up. It's almost like leverage the team to be a teaching culture, which makes it a learning culture.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And you're reminding me of a thing that I did in my second time leading a team, because I did not have the smarts to do this the first time. I created a list of shit that I didn't know enough about. And I asked my team to teach me, and I called it teach me topics. I was like, will you please sign up to teach me, like, how do we do this process nowadays? Because it had been a while, like since I had been in that part of the company. And that was so, I love what you just said of like, we've got to allow people to be teachers if we want to have a learning culture too. Like they work together. That's awesome. Okay. I'm going to try to fly through these because I totally digressed. Okay. Some other tips of how to create a learning culture: make innovation, learning, flexibility, and exploration a priority in, no, I won't say every meeting, but as many as you can. If you need more specific examples of how to do this, I want to refer you guys back to episode 178, where we talk explicitly about what some other people call oops moments and failure resumes. Those will give you two tangible ideas. The other tips, how do you adjust, if you have influence over it, how do you adjust your hiring and onboarding processes to make sure that you're asking interview questions that emphasize behaviors of curiosity and openness to change, and adjusting onboarding procedures by encouraging employees to cross-train a little bit in different departments so they are thinking more globally. The last tip for how to create a learning culture is to change the review process. If you have an opportunity to lead a team right now, explicitly ask them what they have learned as a part of their annual review. And even if you don't, even if you're not a leader of a team, ask yourself that question. I think it's a great opening question to have ongoing conversation with yourself or your employees, if you're a leader, on how they can continue to become more flexible and exploratory in their work. If they're not fucking learning anything new, man, we got to get these people curious about shit again. Like, we got to be curious. If that's what your culture needs right now, caveat there. Okay. Rami, now I want to shift gears just for the last little bit of this episode and talk about what kind of cultures we're trying to cultivate in our family. So I'm curious.
That's fun.
Do you have like family values?
Yes.
You do. What are they?
Curiosity.
Freaking love it. So you.
Kindness.
Love it.
And then we do fun. And then a big one that we've been focused on with a 4-year-old who wants everything is appreciating and being like appreciative. His mantra right now is, I am thankful for the blessings that I have. Like he says that. I don't think he knows what it means, but like when he wants something new, I make him say it. And then I think he gets that he has things. And then you have this one as well, but like, just trying your best, and if you know better, to do better.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me yours again? I loved yours. I feel like ours are probably similar.
I think they are.
You said curiosity, kindness.
Yeah, we said fun.
Fun. And try your best. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Oh, and appreciative.
Appreciation. That's the one that I was like, oh, I need to friggin' add that to our family values. That's because
kids want everything. They want everything. They want it all the time.
They do. I was just talking with Talia last night. We're planning her birthday party right now. And we could both do a family thing and a birthday party for her, right? Mm-hmm. But just for the sake of like principle a little bit, I'm like, no, we're going to choose. We're not going to live in excess. We're going to choose. We're going to practice having to make choices and not just be able to say yes to everything. And she was just very much struggling with that concept of like, but wait, we can do both. I was like, nope, let's just, we can't. Like, let's just say we can't. What do you want to do more? I digress. Okay, so ours are, we also have fun as a value, kindness as a value, try your best. We also have honesty. That's the thing we're working on a little bit with Talia. And respect. That's really important.
I like those.
To Nate. That's maybe not as important to me, but we're trying to find our way through that together as a family. This whole talking about learning culture, though, it's inspiring me to want to ask my kid a new question each night, because I will say she is a perfectionist. We're working with her on that, of like how she approaches her schoolwork and dance and everything. And so we've started asking each other a question now of like, how did you fail today? What's a mistake that you made today? To just normalize it a little bit of like, you get to make mistakes. There's going to be times where you screw up and things don't go perfectly. Rami, how do you...
And you're sharing with her.
Yes.
In the same way that you're asking.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Great. So we do Rosebud Thorn, Silly Squiggly Vine. Like that's like the funny moment of the day. And then we've added in this, like, basically, how did you F up today? Just talk about it. And sometimes it's small things. Sometimes it's like big things that happened. But we're talking about as a family to just normalize. Like we make mistakes and we learn. Rami, how do you role model? I could think of like a billion ways, but I'm curious, how are you trying to role model for Prince right now when it comes to culture values that you want him to have?
I think when I pick him up from school, we talk about like, oh, it was... Man, kids like don't remember anything ever.
I know.
Like, about their day. It reminds me of this funny tweet I saw once where it was like, every day I ask my like child like what they did at school and they always say nothing. Mm. And today I saw a picture of them with a snake around their neck. A real snake. And I was like, oh, you still did nothing? There was an actual snake around your neck. I saw a picture of it and you did nothing.
That's wild.
So it's hard to get him to like remember things, but if the teacher says things, I can be like, oh, you guys worked on the number five. Like, did you work on the number four? And he'll be like, no, we worked on the number five. But they have like a bucket that has tokens in it. And so if they're good, they get tokens put in. If they're bad, they get tokens taken out. So it's like very easy to be like, oh, did you get tokens today? Or did you have tokens taken away? And then he'll get really sad if he had tokens taken away and he'll tell me what happened and we'll talk about it. And then I'll tell him something that I did that got tokens taken away from me for the day. So like, I think he's still little, right? He's like four. So I think as he continues to grow and gets to Talia's age, like he can have more full conversations.
Yeah.
I just feel like he just, unless it was like a high or a low, everything in the middle just disappears. Like they just lose all of that.
I mean, that still happens with Talia a little bit. So it does help to have the Rosebud Thorn, Silly Squiggly, like mistakes, like things to come back to. But yeah, we weren't doing that with her when she was four. We weren't. The other thing I was curious to just briefly touch on is, what did your parents model for you? And I can give an example while I'm having Rami think about that. Both of my parents were constantly modeling a learning culture because they were always reading on different subjects. And one of our most, you can ask any of my siblings, one of our most vivid childhood memories is that we had a set of encyclopedias growing up, because I grew up in an age where you couldn't just like, hey, Google something. Oh, no, now hey, Google's going to be on. And so it would be very much like a part of our regular day life to be like, oh, let's go look that up in the encyclopedias. Like, what does the encyclopedia tell us about woodpeckers? And I hope that we're cultivating that in Talia. She will ask Google a lot of questions, you know, throughout the day, of like, about mermaids, about ghosts lately, whatever it is. She's constantly asking Google questions. That's what about you?
A curious kid.
What were your parents modeling?
I think the most I got it was in my mom, in that she was very... like, food is a huge thing for us, but she was always trying to make new things and different things. Aww. Like, whenever she whenever she would like experience something new or hear about something new, she would like try to do that new thing.
Yeah.
And I think just seeing her constantly learning through food and showing that to us, I think was always like a very much like a, oh, you can like constantly be like learning and growing in your skill sets, which I thought was nice.
That's great. Okay, this has gotten long. Let's bring it on home. Tactically, how do you apply this to your life today? I want you to think about what kind of culture you want to create, both in your workplace and at home. And I will not accept the answer that you cannot influence your culture at work. That's total BS, in my opinion. Maybe we can do an episode on why sometime. Next, I want you to think about where it fits on the matrix. So Google 8 types of workplace cultures, and you can kind of look it over and decide for yourself, like, what's the one word that I can apply to the type of culture I'm trying to create? Third, pick one thing you can do this week to begin shifting the culture. So here's an example of what that might look like. You might decide you're going to go with a learning culture. Ask yourself the question, what have I learned this week? And ask it of your peers and other people on your team as well. On that note, we'd love for you to connect with us on LinkedIn or Instagram at Workplace Hugs and share with us, what did you learn this week? Because I think Rami and I would both be promoting a learning culture with our Workplace Hugs culture.
Our Workplace Hugs community is going to be a learning community.
Yeah, we're committed to learning. That's why we show up and read these books and articles and share them with you every day.
I love it.
With that, I've been Shannon.
I've been Rami, and this has been Workplace Hugs.